Hello. It's March 13th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are looking forward to a great weekend. And I want to apologize and say that I'm sorry. I apologize again that I was late for this new episode. I'm trying to do it weekly, but sometimes life gets in the way. So sometimes I'll go ahead and say sometimes new episodes may be every other week. Some episodes may be every week, but I'm trying so hard not to leave you hanging for several weeks at a time that I've done in the past. I'm trying to be more consistent with this new season, season 6, and going forward. So I apologize again for being late. Didn't have an episode last week, but here I am again with a brand new episode. And before we begin today's episode, I'll go ahead and let you know that today's format is a little different than other episodes, but I think you still may find it interesting. And also go ahead and give a disclaimer again and say that today's episode talks about crimes against the elderly. So, therefore, listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1996, and in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the state's most populated city, many people here enjoyed living in a city with a beautiful backdrop. Albuquerque, like the state as a whole, was known for its serene desert landscape, filled with warm days and cool nights, while housed near the picturesque Sandia Mountains. Also, locals and visitors here enjoyed mingling around the cultural melting pot, which included aspects of food, art, music, and more, of Native and Hispanic cultures, amongst others. Also around this time, Albuquerque began an emerging entertainment scene, with bars and other entertainment venues booming even more business for their downtown area and their famed, colorful streets of the Old Town area. However, despite the economic growth and beautiful landscape of the city, reports state during the 90s, Albuquerque also experienced a rise in crime with an uptick in property crime, drug crimes, and homicides, with the latter attributed to the rise in gang violence and other organized crime. However, in March of 1996, a shooting occurred here that left multiple people dead, and it had nothing to do with gang violence. It had to deal with greed. And the crime was so bad that it would shatter many families and leave people wondering why this incident had to occur in the first place. In the following case, you'll find out what ghastly event happened here. The investigation and the aftermath in a case I title, For My Man. In the early morning hours of March 3, 1996, 77-year-old George McDougal and his wife, 72-year-old Pauline, arrived at their local Hollywood Video store in Albuquerque, New Mexico, around 2 a.m. The couple wasn't there, though, to get a last-minute video. They were there to pick up their grandson, 19-year-old Zachary Blacklock, who was an employee there and who was helping close the store. Reports state that when they pulled into the parking lot, Pauline, who was driving, blew the horn as a signal to Zachary that they were there. A short while later, as they were still waiting, a petite woman came near their car and asked them if she could sit in their car because she was picking up another worker and was waiting for them to finish up. And she was going to wait in her own car, but the heat didn't work. The McDougals, known for their niceness, let the woman in their car and let her wait with them. But then, reports state, after a while, a man came out of the store, charged at their car, opened the door, and then got in. Hours later, reports state, morning shift employees at the video store arrived at work and noticed the door was unlocked. This was odd because the closing staff usually locked the store when they left. Still, the workers went inside, and as they went deeper inside the store, they came across a horrific sight and called police. According to reports, when police arrived at Hollywood Video, both workers at the store ran up to them hysterical, with one of them leading them to the back room of the store. And there in the back were the three bodies of their co-workers, 30-year-old Mylon Dothy, 18-year-old Jawanda Castile, and 19-year-old Zachary Blacklock, the McDougal's grandson. They were all face down on the floor and had been shot in the back of their heads, and they were all confirmed dead. As word spread around Albuquerque and the victims' loved ones spoke to police, detectives were shocked to learn from Zachary's loved ones that his grandparents, Pauline and George, were supposed to pick him up from work, and they had not made it back home. With the news of the triple murder at Hollywood Video and one of the victims' grandparents missing, local media covered both news stories around the clock to alert the public and to hope someone would come forward with any information. Reports state some tips trickled in, but they weren't substantial, and police were said to have focused mostly on finding the missing McDougals. On the next morning, March 4th, reports state that around 11 a.m., detectives received word about a suspicious white vehicle seen off a state road near the Sandia Mountains. When they went to check, they noticed the car matched the description of the McDougal's vehicle, and the car was confirmed to be the couple's by the license plate. Disturbingly, as police got closer, they discovered the bodies of Pauline and George outside the car, and they too had been shot to death. Now, the race was on to find out who did this to the couple, and detectives felt the double murder was connected to the triple murder at the video store. And they worked around the clock with a dedicated task force to find suspects. After some days of not getting anywhere with the investigation, detectives went to the media and offered a $100,000 reward for substantial information or suspects. And reports state, on March 11th, detectives received a call from a tipster, and he said he knew who was behind all the murders. This tipster was different, though, because reports state the informant spoke of facts that hadn't been released to the public. He spoke with certainty of how the chain of events went down, and he spoke of specific evidence found at both crime scenes. And he said the murderers were his ex-girlfriend, 41-year-old Esther Beckley, and her friend, 26-year-old Shane Harrison. According to reports, not much is known publicly about Esther Beckley's childhood and adolescence. But reports state, during her teen years, she lived a rough life and spiraled into substance abuse by smoking marijuana and using LSD. She eventually started using meth as well, and by the time she was 25 in 1992, she was using crack cocaine. Also around the age of 25, she married a man named Abe Beckley, and they settled in Hobbs, New Mexico. However, reports state Esther didn't exactly settle down when she got married, and shortly after her marriage, she was arrested in Texas for two drug misdemeanors, and later another misdemeanor, and two drug felonies in New Mexico. She was able to get probation for all of these charges, but in 1995, while on probation for a 1991 drug charge, Esther tested positive for drug use and was sentenced to 6 years in prison. Also by this time, she'd been separated from Abe for some time because he was tired of her racking up charges. But when she entered prison, Esther was said to have taken her time here in stride and hoped the 6 years would go by swiftly. Lucky for her, reports state she only served 5 months of her sentence because officials felt she was a good candidate for New Mexico's Community Corrections Program, which reports state was a program that provided an alternative to prison or an early release for inmates before they were eligible for parole. The early release portion of the program was also intended to help inmates make the transition from prison life back to society. When Esther was granted this early release, though, she had to get a stable job, enter a drug program, and check in with an anger management counselor weekly, to which she agreed. After Esther entered the program, she got a job working as a waitress and was joined by other early release candidates at her meetings. And sometime after her release, she was joined by a 45-year-old ex-con named John Lausel. According to reports, John spent time in and out of prison for several years. And during most of his stints, possibly due to his size, he was feared. But he was also known to protect many of the younger inmates. When he and Esther met, reports state they flirted a bit, became intimate, and entered a relationship. They had their own budget-friendly apartments, but Esther was said to have spent most of her time at John's place. However, reports state that shortly after they started a relationship, John began a new romance and told Esther to pretty much make herself scarce. Esther was hurt because she was really into John. And when John told her to back off, Esther decided to get revenge by rebounding with one of John's friends' sons, who was only 17 years old in early 1996. Reports state that even though John wanted to spend more time with his new fling, he would still flirt with Esther on the side. And reports state that when he caught Esther with the 17-year-old, he flipped out. But not on her, the 17-year-old. Esther was said to have tried to stop John from hurting the 17-year-old, but it didn't work, and John beat him up. However, after the confrontation, John realized he had committed a crime while on parole and decided to skip town with his girlfriend and Esther's help. Reports state that John decided to flee to Colorado with his girlfriend, but didn't have a car or money. So, for money, he got Esther to pay for him and his girlfriend. And for the drive, he got his and Esther's friend and his former fellow inmate, Shane Harrison. According to reports, Shane Glenn Harrison was born in Massachusetts and raised in a military family by his adoptive parents, Dale and Christina Harrison, in Harrisburg, New Mexico. Dale was a corrections officer and volunteer fireman, and Christina was a daycare teacher. Reports state that while the Harrisons tried to raise Shane in a loving and devout Christian household, reports state he never felt like he belonged. You see, as he got older, Shane felt he was out of place as he was adopted. And due to these feelings, he reportedly stayed to himself. Reports also state he was so introverted at school that he really didn't talk to anyone, although he did have some friends. By the time Shane got to high school, the family had been living in Colorado for a short time. And here, he attended an alternative high school, possibly due to behavioral and academic issues. Here, though, he also barely spoke to anyone or had barely any friends. And when the Harrisons moved back to New Mexico, this time settling in the city of Truth or Consequences, Shane attended his last two semesters of high school here, with no real social progress. As a matter of fact, when asked by his fellow alumni of 47 students from his last high school if they remember anything about him, most said no, but that maybe he was tall. By the time he graduated at age 20, reports state Shane enlisted in the Navy to try and turn his life around, but he was discharged after 5 months due to emotional instability. After his discharge, Shane moved to West Yellowstone, Montana, where his family worked food stands in the summer to try and get another fresh start. He was hired at the local Stagecoach Inn, but again was asked to leave after a 90-day probationary period due to behavior. After this, Shane reportedly worked odd jobs here and there while still in the Yellowstone area. But after a while, he had enough and decided to make money in a more sinister way. Reports state that in December 1990, Shane robbed his former employer, the Stagecoach Inn, by bounding and gagging an employee and then taking off for $3,000. A few days later, reports state Shane and a friend entered a local steakhouse back in Truth or Consequences, bound, gagged, and blindfolded the owner, smashed the restaurant's phones, and took off with some money. However, the owner was able to identify the two, and on December 23rd, both men were arrested. In September 1991, Shane was sentenced to 10 years for the steakhouse robbery to be served concurrently with his sentence for the Montana robbery. But he was paroled in July 1995 and released in August 1995 to the same program Esther was in, with the district court saying, quote unquote, "The defendant is designated as a non-dangerous offender for the purposes of parole release." However, before he was released, this is where he met John Lausel. John was known to be a protector of Shane, and they formed a bond. After his stint in prison, Shane kept in touch with John, and he also got a job at a convenience market and an electric company, but lost the latter job after lying about his criminal history. By 1996, after Esther, Shane, and John were paroled, they all hung out, and as mentioned before, after John knew he might go back to prison after beating up Esther's underage fling, he got Esther and Shane to help him and his new fling leave town. However, the group was soon running out of money, and Esther worried because though John had left her, she still loved him and wanted to help him. When she brought her concern to Shane, he suggested Esther join him on a pastime he had in the past, robbery. Esther was hesitant as it was risky, but Shane assured her it was easy money and she could help John and possibly get back with him. So Esther agreed. Reports state that in February 1996, Shane and Esther robbed a fast food restaurant using water pistols that resembled real guns, and they made off with a little money. They then used the proceeds to buy real semi-automatic pistols and sent the rest of the money to John. Then they robbed another restaurant and again sent most of the money to John. Then, in early March, Shane came up with the idea of robbing Hollywood Video because he was sure they could make a lot of money. Reports state that in the early morning hours of March 3rd, 1996, Esther and Shane arrived at the Hollywood Video store and pretended to be customers. Esther then approached Mylon Dothy and asked her if she was the manager. When Mylon said she was, Esther pulled out a pistol and forced her to the back room while Shane joined them. Shane then told Esther to get back in their car, but shortly after she did, Shane noticed the McDougals pull up. Reports state he didn't like this and went out and told Esther to get them to let her sit with them. Then around this time, after Esther persuaded the couple to let her sit in their car, she heard gunshots coming from the store. Shane then fled the store, approached the car, and told Esther to get out so he could replace her. He then told Esther to follow in her car. Shane forced the McDougals to drive to a remote road off State Road 14. Once there, Shane got out of the car and got a shotgun out of Esther's car. He then ordered the McDougals out of the car and forced them to go near a fence. And he then shot them to death. Shane then got back in Esther's car and drove away back to Hollywood Video, got a clipboard, stole $1,000, and then retrieved the store's security videotape from that night. The pair then went to Shane's apartment, burned the tape, and split the money. Then Esther went home. However, a short time after the massacre, she told what she did to the one person she felt she needed to do all this for, and that was John, who in return became the informant and turned Esther and Shane into police. When Shane and Esther were finally arrested on March 13, 1996, and brought in for questioning, they blamed each other for what happened, but the police had enough evidence by this point to arrest them for the massacre. At her trial, Esther, who had a plea deal to testify against Shane to avoid the death penalty, testified about what was previously stated, and she said that after the murders, she wired money to John, who caught a bus to Santa Fe later that evening. Esther then picked him up and brought him back to Albuquerque. John stayed days with Esther, and they argued a lot, especially after John confronted her about a sexually explicit letter from a former boyfriend of hers, to which Esther told him he didn't need to worry about that ex, as she wanted John, and told him that she had killed for him. When John testified, he said when Esther told him that she'd killed for him, he didn't quite understand her. However, he said she told him, quote-unquote, the Hollywood video murder thing. After Esther confessed to him, he went back to Colorado and called the police from there and told them everything he knew. He testified he also knew nothing about the murder plan, but he did receive later the reward money. In April 1997, Esther Beckley was sentenced to 95 years without parole. Shane testified at his trial in December 1997 that he did not kill at the store or the McDougals, and that it was all Esther's idea. However, the jury did not believe him, and he was found guilty of murder in January 1998 and sentenced to 258 years. After both trials, Esther was interviewed by local media, and when asked if the murders were worth it, she regretted her part in the crimes and felt horrible about the victims, but she said she still loved John. The story of the Hollywood video murders and the murders of Pauline and George McDougal comes from the sources of KOAT News, the Albuquerque Tribune, the New York Times, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so that one was a lot, of, as always, of 90s crime time stories. But first, I'm going to do a very short opinion piece. First, number one, rest in peace to all the victims. None of you deserved this. I know there's many robberies gone wrong in America, but I do believe with Shane's past and all his behavioral issues documented, I believe he probably wanted to kill. He didn't just want the money, he wanted to kill. Because it's just, I feel like there was behavioral issues, obviously, and I feel like he wanted to take it there. And Esther, I don't know if she was planning on anyone getting hurt or killed, but it happened and she had to pay the price just like him, just to please this guy, John, who wouldn't give her the time of day except for money and possibly like sex or whatever, attention. Because as I mentioned earlier, he dumped her for another fling and moved to Colorado with a new fling with the help of Esther. So he was just using Esther the entire time with money, with sex, with money, with the car or whatever. Now, Shane drove him, but apparently Esther had the better car and she would help drive him to and from Colorado to New Mexico as well, this John guy. And she got played in the end because who turned them in? John. John saw money. John knew what happened. John was like, well, whatever, I can get another woman, I guess, and got that $100,000. Well, $93,000. I don't know why it went $7,000 less, but whatever. $93,000 to him was probably a lot of money. It is to me. But John played the woman who wanted to please him the most, which was Esther, and she got played, and now she's in there for 95 years. She'll probably die in prison. Shane will die in prison after getting 258 years, and it's none of this was worth it. She could have found other ways to give John money. She probably could have gotten more than one job. I don't know how the parole system works or how that program worked, but she had one job. And if she couldn't afford John, then she couldn't afford John. John would find some other way to make money. Now, he did make money with, you know, Esther's help, but Esther helped, you know, rob and robbery gone wrong in the most sinister way. And that's how he got money from Esther, not by her hard work, working as a waitress, but by her committing this mass, help committing this massacre with Shane. And I also read somewhere that John testified that she thought Shane and Esther were lovers for a moment. And I think I read that somewhere from another source, but I can't put that in concrete. But apparently Esther and Shane, while they were on their robbing spree, hooked up a few times and they became lovers. But the ultimate goal to Esther was John, and the ultimate goal to Shane was money. And now look, innocent lives are gone. And Esther even said at trial, Myelin Dothy, the manager, the night manager of the Hollywood Video, was praying before she was murdered. And that's just horrible. And Esther, I believe, could have tried to stop this. Maybe she couldn't have, I don't know, but I think she could have stopped this. But like I said before, she wanted to please this guy, John, so much with money that she did whatever it took to get that money, even if it meant robbing and possible death for victims, to please this guy, John, who ended up playing her in the end. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this brand new episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope you found it interesting. If you liked what you heard and haven't done so, please leave a review and rating if your podcast platform has a rating system. Also, please look out for new episodes of my other previous show, my previous show, Love Triangle Murders. I mentioned weeks ago that new episodes of that show would premiere back then, but obviously that didn't work out. So they will this weekend. Look out for a new episode of Love Triangle Murders and old Love Triangle Murders episodes, if you subscribe, of course. Also, if you have subscribed to 90s Crime Time on Medium.com, please look out for a new article I will post there also this weekend. Stay safe and healthy. Look out for all new things 90s Crime Time, and I will see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.